very welcome along to season 3 episode 24 of LOI Weekly. It's Dan in the hot seat here this week as Johnny Ward is away on one of his many holidays, more holidays than Catherine Thomas in an average year. We'll hear from him shortly. And to replace him, I'm not sure if actually replace is the word, but because Johnny, some people are just irreplaceable. You know, so you can't really always replace that number 10 player, that playmaker. You don't know what he's going to do next. So we've got Shane Keegan in here.
You go with something very different, don't you?
You're more of a midfield stopper, you know, someone who'd be a bit more reliable,
that's it.
less likely to take a risk.
I'll just sit back and mind the house. We'll leave the flamboyance to Johnny further up the field, I think, yeah.
But the good thing is, we actually might actually have him on the line already. Johnny, where in the world are you this week, Johnny?
Good morning, lads. I'm just in Cannes here in the south of France, just a couple of days away, seeing how people with wealth and, you know, influence and resources all live. Amazing weather, very, very warm. And I have to find an Irish bar now that'll show the Dundalk game tomorrow night.
So how many holidays is this? I think I know. I said to you last night, I said, John, it's a lot of holidays this year. And you said, only 3. And I was thinking, like, I feel like sending a message to that Boom Is Back account that you're sort of vaguely obsessed with, because where were your previous holidays this year? Just remind us.
Just a couple of trips to New York, although one of them was a kind of an impromptu decision to go to a wedding. Right. And my sister had a wedding then at the weekend, just gone, and all of those Americans that I would have met were back in Ireland. So I'm just vaguely recovered at this stage. It was a lot of fun, and plenty of League of Ireland chat actually as well. You know, there were people who were at the wedding who would kind of be aware of the podcast and aware of maybe the radio work, and a lot of chat about League of Ireland and very favourable stuff as well. People who wouldn't have been interested in it's not too bad.
You were in your element, so people knew who you were, did they, Johnny?
The odd one now, but like there are, you know, I'm a ward from East Galway, so I'm fairly well known, you know.
So like Johnny, we're not going to keep you on for too long because obviously we need to get back to very important holiday business, but we just thought we want to get your Johnny Ward's 3 holiday hot takes of the week just gone. We had 2 European wins, but a couple of other, I suppose a couple of European defeats, round of fixtures. I just think like we want to know what your 3 big opinions of last week were, John. Just get to the heart of the matter here for us.
I think it's, first of all, very, very important that it worked out as it did. And to have Cork City going so close as well, to pulling off a major shock, I think Cork will have huge regret because they'll know that they couldn't, on another year, they really should be winning that tie. For the League of Ireland, I'm not sure how Cork would have gotten on against Rangers, to be honest. I don't think Cork are really at it this season, as we all see. So it was great that the other 2 teams got through, because when you were watching the penalty shootout in the Dundalk game, you had to just fear the way that the penalties were going. It was a bit like Federer missing his 2 match points, that like they had 2 chances really to kind of go through, having Gary Rogers making saves and so forth. And I thought Jamie McGrath, the composure he showed in the circumstances with the delay of the penalty, the fact that he had to score, and the fact that the penalty, the kind of the spot was all smudged as well. I thought he was really, really mentally strong.
Okay. Yeah, so Jamie McGrath composure is one hot take. We're not getting a lot of hot takes here. It's more of a monologue. Right? What else?
Yeah,
give us some strong opinions from the week just gone, John.
I think Dundalk, without knowing an awful lot about Carabag, I suppose, from what you see, I think Dundalk have to play an awful lot better. But I think they can, given that McElhenney and Robbie Benson looked very rusty, really, on the night. Michael Duffy wasn't playing. So they're key players. I think they can play better, but they're very much up against it. I probably, on Shamrock Rovers, Dan, I'd be more confident that they might get through, because I think they're probably just playing a little bit better in Europe than Dundalk, but also I think Carabag would just be better than the Cypriot team that they're playing. And that's just from my own sort of limited enough knowledge. But I suppose the main hot take of the whole lot is Jack Byrne. When you think about the 4 goals they scored, he had a hand in them all. If you remember the miss that Aaron Green had in the second half in Bran, that was all down to a brilliant ball by Jack Byrne. And you have to say, Rovers signing Jack Byrne has basically got them into the second round of the next round of the Europa League, because other than Jack, they probably wouldn't have gotten through. And the one sort of real positive we can take from the whole thing is that it's not automatically assumed that he's straight on the way back to England, even though he's clearly good enough to play at whatever level that is. And it was an absolute pleasure to watch Jack Byrne, and I think Rovers will have real, real hope that they can progress again past Limassol.
Yeah, I saw some midnight sort of tweets going back and forth between yourself and Jack. Have you become sort of a mentor figure to him, John?
He's a mentor to me. It's kind of like on when things go badly wrong in various jobs, eventually they can work out, you know. But I've only met Jack when he was on the podcast. You weren't in, unfortunately, that week, Dan. I know you've gotten on well with Jack, but he's a very likable lad. He's a proper Dublin townie, and he's a very different upbringing to me from the inner city. But he's a very likable lad, and I don't know if I've seen a performance like that in Tala the other night. I know he got the goal against UCD, but he's an extraordinarily talented player. And, there are a lot of comparisons, but he does basically run games. I thought he was the best player on the pitch. And you were privileged to be a League of Ireland fan to watch him.
You'd actually be disappointed that there's not an international game coming up very soon, wouldn't you? A really important one. You'd love to see, to test Mick McCarthy. Would he actually throw him in? I mean, non-League of Ireland fans would say it's outlandish he went to England and he failed and all of that kind of stuff, and that he should be way down the pecking order behind others, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know, Dan.
I think it's a bit different with Jack. I think actually even the non-League of Ireland fan, they still remember Jack as being the Man City, Camber, Golden Boy. And there's always a certain type of Ireland fan that always gets in touch with me, say on Twitter and stuff like that, that there's a man of the moment player that they're obsessed with. So it was Danny Crowley last year, because he's off in Holland doing something, or there was times where it was Kelly and Sheridan or someone who's abroad and doing something in a different league, a more exotic league in some respects. I think because Jack has been there, I think people almost recognise that Jack's here because he's made mistakes or things haven't gone out, but no one really doubts his ability. I don't think anyone really doubts Jack Byrne's ability.
Like if you look at the most recent international performances, and if you write down the prototype of what is this team missing, like you're literally writing down a description of
someone
Jack
with
Byrne. It's exactly what you're writing down. The only excuse for not throwing him in is, you know, is he doing it at a high enough level? And now he's doing it at European level, not just League of Ireland level. Mm. So, look, again, there can be a tendency, you know, Pat Hoban scores a few goals, we want Pat Hoban in the team, all this, that kind of thing, but I don't know.
The Hoban thing, Shane, as well, like, Hoban, I don't think many people in League of Ireland ever thought this, you know, Hoban would kind of get into the Ireland setup, because it is a different level, but you should be able to recognise a talent that is clearly just playing in a level that is the level that he's at for a reason that has nothing to do with his own ability. And Jack Byrne is that player. You can see it in his technical ability and his basic ability to run games. But I think, you know, Dan alluded to it. I did send him a couple of messages just saying well done and all that, but he got back to me and he was really complimentary of not only the quality of the Rovers team, but the quality of their coaching staff. And he said it's a really, really good setup here, and I think Rovers should be proud of the way they're going off the pitch, because they are building into a proper club. And looking at Tala the other night, if they could fill it out on Thursday, it'll seem like a proper football club there with a proper kind of environment. And he's playing in Europe. He wouldn't be playing in Europe if he were playing in England.
Have you reached a decision on your Baku or Ballybrit dilemma, John? Just finally, where will you be next week?
Anywhere. I know. We had a bit of a banter about this, Dan, that you had five European countries that you hadn't visited of the 55?
I think that's it, yeah. Yeah, so I'm trying to... UEFA countries, yeah. I'm sure they're in Europe.
Not unrecognised places like Nagorno-Karabakh, which is actually where Karabakh originally hailed from. But that's part of the reason I want to go over there, because Azerbaijan's going to be a fascinating place. I don't think we're going to get to the ghost town that the club is actually born out of, because it was basically another Chernobyl in the
90s. No, I was reading up on it last night, John. I think it'd be a bit ambitious.
It sounds a bit like some of those towns you go through in the Midlands on the way home to Galway, every now and then. But
Ballybrit could never survive without you, could it?
I don't know. I'm just getting a bit too old for Galway, Shane, to be honest. I you could go there for maybe a couple of days, but you know, the way I feel this morning now after that wedding weekend, I'm not sure how much of Galway I can do. I'm angling towards Baku, but Dan, I'm going to make a plea. I do need work. I'm a freelance journalist. I need to pay for something.
This is shameless. I must say,
though, €1,000 cost over there, like, you know, between flights, accommodation, and a couple of beers with my fellow journalists and all that.
Johnny did go through a phase of bringing back a new girlfriend from the Galway races every year, so I'm kind of wondering what he'd bring back from Baku. But anyway,
she's in the background here, actually. But have a great show, lads. I think I just hope, Dan, that Dundalk are still very much in the tie, because I do think Karabeg are going to be a major, major step up. And Dundalk haven't gotten going in Europe, offensively anyway.
Okay. Well, listen, I don't know what you've got planned for the rest of the day, John, but we'll leave you to it. Very important business. And I'm sure everyone's looking forward to having you back. Actually, I don't know where you'll be next week. You might have to might have to do it from Baku, depending on how Dundalk got on in the first leg. So we'll cross that bridge when we come to
it. If you give me 2 weeks in a row, Johnny, you're never getting the seat back.
thanks for the call, lads.
See you, John. Take care. So that's Johnny Ward there. I should mention, by the way, we are in association as ever with Airsport and Independent.ie, and you can find us on Podcast Republic, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, etc. at LOI Weekly on Twitter, and I suppose we'll take any reviews. We don't have any prizes for reviews now. We're just looking on your generosity. Shane, Johnny's having a good time anyway.
Johnny Ward, friend of the stars, isn't he?
Yeah.
Firing text forward and back with Irish, soon to be Irish star, Jack Byrne, if we get our way, but... He slipped in Roger Federer's name there at one stage, and I was really, really expecting him to say he had been exchanging texts with Roger Federer at that stage.
Johnny's one of these people that uses WhatsApp and a laptop, right? So if you ever, like, you're near Johnny's laptop, you just see, like, a variety of figures of the football racing world just getting, all right, kid, and all these messages. And then he doesn't even read any of the responses.
Oh, yeah, sort keeps of, six conversations going at once. Yeah.
And sometimes when he's on the pod, there's around six conversations going on at once as well. But we'll try and have a slightly more structured operation this week when he's not here. So we do have some guests. So we've got John Sullivan, currently of Crumlin, but sort of well-known League of Ireland midfielder, defender. Versatile, played for a number of clubs. And we've got Will Clark as well, the director of football at St. Joseph's Boys and academy director at Bray. So you're very welcome, lads.
Cheers, lads.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking briefly there just with Johnny about last week we had Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers progression in Europe. I mean, John, you know, it's a big time of the year for the league, the European games. I don't know if you maybe saw any of the matches or what you got a sense of what happened, but obviously positive news that Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers at least have got through a round.
Yeah, it's massive. It gives us, again, as fans, something more to look forward to, and quarterback, fantastic opponents. We've seen them last year. You know, it'll be interesting to see what our top team can do against the best teams in Europe.
You'd obviously got on quite well with Andy Boyle. Andy Boyle, when he came home, he mentioned, had he, because you obviously work in a gym as well, so you started putting Andy Boyle and Richie Towle through our paces a bit.
It was just a nice day like today, and we said, let's get the balls and cones out and do a conditioning session. And funnily enough, a few people were like, oh, where's Andy going, Richie? We didn't even talk about football.
Yeah.
Just kick the ball, condition and work, and that was it. And 2 days later, I think he signed for.
There must be both. Fairly happy with the moves they both ended up with. I know they're very different moves, but they must both be happy with the outcomes, I'd imagine, are they?
Yeah, last I spoke to her, extremely happy. They had other offers, and, you know, weighed the pros and cons and said happiness is what they're looking for.
I thought last week in the Dundalk match over in Riga, like, Sean Hoare got the plaudits, and rightly so, he did very well. But I think Andy Boyle's presence, even when he came on in the first leg, it sort of just goes to show that if good players become available like that, you still sort of have to go from them. There was nothing wrong with what's there. There still is nothing wrong with what's there. They've got excellent centre halves, but I just thought Boyle's presence was still very significant.
Absolutely.
In the two games.
Look, they have an incredible array of centre halves, really, when you look at it now. I mean, you're talking about, I don't know, have they four of the top six centre halves nearly in the league? You know, they really, really have some outstanding centre halves. And it is a headache, but I mean, he'll be cute about it, Vinny and Gillard. They'll pick their horses for certain races and that. And I mean, they didn't throw Andy straight in. I think he did sit in the bench for one or two
weeks.
Games, didn't he?
They played him up in Derry, I think, just to get some minutes.
Get the sharpness into him and that. But I'd say the lads are clever enough that they, you know, I'd say there's a long-term plan. I'd say if you asked them for three games down the road what the pairing is going to be there and what the pairing is going to be there, you know, I'd say they knew exactly that. I'd say they'd pinpointed from a couple of weeks off that Andy Boyle was going to start this one. He was absolutely excellent. I mean, as you say, and the problem, I suppose, that the other centre-halves now are going to have is that himself and Hoare look a really good balance. They look a very, very good
balance. Even though they might normally both play left side, potentially, but they've managed... They're talented enough to make it work, I guess.
Absolutely. And I'm more so talking maybe about their strengths and weaknesses as players, maybe more so than a right foot, left foot combination thing. But look, I mean, whichever two of the four that they go with at the moment,
they always look composed, regardless of the opposition. Like, you never see either of them make a bad tackle or a last ditch tackle. They're just constantly chilling. I like Rolls Royces.
Well, we were speaking a bit just before you came in there about Shamrock Rovers as well. And you're someone who's very much on top of the schoolboy football scene and would have been on top of the schoolboy football scene for the last 10, 15, 20 years in the sense of Jack Byrne. Jack Byrne's name, I assume, as someone involved with Joey's, Jack Byrne's name comes onto your radar as someone that was with another club.
Yeah.
But how good was he?
Jack was always great. Yeah. I actually remember, it's funny because we were only just talking in the club there last week. I think Kevin's and Joe's are probably the top two teams in that age group, sort of all the way through. Now, Kevin's would have been better than us, but we were probably next best, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember down the Noggin one, it was a Sunday morning. I think it was only 9-a-side. And I think he scored a last-minute winner, you know. And again, like that too, Jack being Jack at that young age, you know, we sort of ran up and down the Joe's sideline, sort of rubbing in a little bit, you know. But it was a brilliant goal. But again, if you look at like Rovers and that last week and Dundalk, I think it was great. Obviously, the two clubs going through, but, you know, you need players with the quality of Jack Bourne to maybe like unlock, you know, defences at that level, if you know what I mean. You know, I think if you look at Irish teams in general, we're fairly functional, well-structured. But when we step up to that level, you know, you need that star quality that obviously Jack possesses and that, you know. So I thought last week, certainly in the home tie, I thought he was excellent against Brown.
If we don't have a huge amount of players like that, I mean, someone like Brandon Kavanagh springs to mind as someone who has a bit of those creative qualities as well. But I don't know, you would do a lot of analysis of you know, the underage scene in Ireland. I don't know how we're fixed in terms of players of that quality coming through the ranks.
Like, again, it's difficult because, to be honest with you, you know, I think, you know, probably, you know, it's probably slightly controversial, but sometimes I think, you know, young players are coached too much, you know, and, you know, you have to allow them the opportunity to be creative and use their imagination and to improvise and things like that, you know, and it's something that we always sort of try and speak to the coaches in the club, you know. You don't want to coach that raw NSL players, if you know what I mean.
It's very much like the scripted, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even when you play against them, you're kind of like, oh, I know what they're going
to
do next.
Yeah. And it's like when you go to England, like, and you're watching an academy game, like, and it's like watching 22 Robots. Mm. Do you know what I mean? The left foot will get on the ball and you know what he's going to do. You know, and that's why I think sometimes lads, when they go over from here a little bit later, you know, they're still not that polished, if you like, you know, and they'll give, you know, maybe English clubs something a little different, if you like, you know, because I think lads coming through their system over there, because they've been in like academy football all the way through, as John said, like it is a little scripted, you know. So I think as a coaching community, it's very important not to overcoach players, you know, because sometimes I think you can coach creativity out of them.
Yeah, I mean, John, what do you make of that? Because you're showing interest in going down the coaching road as well, and you've been away too. So what would your opinion be on that subject?
I completely agree. Like, there's players you play against, so you're watching, you're like, I know what they're going to do. You know where the ball's going to go in the next three moves. And you come up against a Jack Bourne or a Keith Ward, and you're like, this wasn't in the script. I don't know what they're going to do. They step over, twirl. It's like watching six-year-olds get a ball out in the street. They can just do anything. And like Will was saying, if it's not scripted, of course it's creative and we're in awe, but to them it's nothing.
You bring up Brandon Kavanagh's name. Like, you'd love to think that he has the wherewithal to, you know, say to Jack, you know, can you show me this, or can you do a little bit of this with me, or that kind of thing. I think, but just on the broader topic of talking about coaching doesn't necessarily always have to come from the coach. Like when I was at Galway, say, we would have had a young player, well, yeah, he was reasonably young, say, Pádraig Cunningham coming through, right? And Podge had loads of ability, but he was raw, right? And then you had Ronan Murray landed on the scene. Ronan was in a couple of weeks, and he would have come to me then after a training session, and he it came from him, not from me. Yeah. He said, listen, do you mind if I grab the balls and do 10 minutes with Podge on a bit of movement? His movement is a bit raw. And I said, happy days. So you've got a fella whose movement, Ronan was on fire obviously at the time, you've got a fella whose movement is superb and is in his, you know, second half of his 20s and understands the game more, taking the balls, taking a young player and saying, here, come on, we'll go and do 10 minutes here and I'll show you a couple of things that I think you could do a little bit better. I mean, if you've got Jack Bourne doing that with Brandon Kavanagh, I mean, that accelerates, to me, that accelerates.
Do you think Jack would be able to do that, though, in the sense that, is it very natural to him? Could he explain what he does?
This is what I'd like to know. When I watch football, you know, or sport in general, I ask that the question, I would love to know what's going on inside the mind of that person right now.
Mm.
You know, everyone uses football IQ. You're like, is it IQ? We haven't asked him the question. If we haven't asked him the question, he could be just possibly following the instructions of the coach.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to coach, to be honest with you. I think the important thing is not to coach it out of a player, if you like, you know. Like, and I think, you know, I think it's really important just to encourage those lads, you just let them get on it, basically, if you know what I mean. You sort of take the shackles off and, you know, give them free rein to be creative and that, you know. And
it does appear that that's what Stephen has done. He does seem to be setting up a system that effectively he's able to say to Jack, look, Jack, go and, within reason, go and do your own thing. I remember being in Tala for the Rovers Dundalk game a few weeks back. The one where Rovers were very good in the first half and Dundalk
still
somehow lost it. But like, he was nominally playing on the right that day, and I was sitting in the stand on the left. And the amount of balls he picked up, kind of 5-10 yards off the left hands off the left sideline, was just amazing. And there's a freedom in it, but there's also structure within that freedom, because you can see Ronan Finn's eyes kind of shift into the right as much as say, okay, I'm going to need to cover over there for him now if that breaks down. But you have to credit Stephen for, you know, I think initially everybody was saying you can't maroon Jack out on the right, but he's anything but marooned out on the right, really.
Yeah, and the nature of having those players in your team, like, you know, there is always going to be an element of frustration, because you're not going to, you know, they're not going to do it every single time to get on the ball or whatever, you know. So again, I think that's where the coach or whatever, the manager's got to, you know, obviously make allowances for that, you know. And it's and again, that's getting away from the being overly structured as a team, and that, you know, and you know, because it's it certainly can be frustrating at times, like if, you know, if they don't have a great game or whatever. And but when it comes down to it, you look at the game the other night, it was a massively important moment in the tie, and to be fair, you look at the technical ability and, you know, the way he sort of, you know, improvised or whatever, and for me it was probably the, you know, the most significant part over the two games, that particular moment, you know.
Because we spoke about the Ireland thing earlier, and it's maybe, I even spoke to Jack after, it's not fair maybe that so he does well and everyone's straight away going, what about Ireland, what about your next move? Like, he's actually enjoying his football now, so maybe he just needs to do that.
People actually forget that about athletes, you know. They have to be happy, we have to be happy as humans. It's not about going chasing something else that isn't on their agenda. Even recently when I spoke to him, he was like, I'm happy, thumbs up, you know, I'm happy.
I think that's there's a lot to be said for that, because I think in some respects you can see how he's developing, and if he keeps going the way he is, all that will come anyway. I think, you know, he doesn't necessarily need to force or agitate for that to happen. If he keeps doing what he's doing, it'll come. But the point I was going to make, we spoke about the Irish thing, is that, and we had Kevin Kilbane in a couple of weeks, and he's watched a fair bit of Jack, and his point would have been sort of slightly critical in the sense that he felt there was times in games where Jack was just too much trying to drop, get the ball off the centre halves, wasn't being effective. And I wonder with the Irish thing when he was in March, that he seemed to be put in the same bracket as Josh Cullen, who was in, who actually does operate a bit deeper for his club. I think the argument with Jack is, if you can just get him in the opposition half, and I know he likes to drift, he always wants to be on the ball, but there's still an element of coaching there a small bit to almost say, impact the game in those areas.
I think what he needs to do is, he needs to be really, really clever. He needs to look at what do Ireland have at the moment, what do Ireland not have at the moment. Okay, because Jack, let's be honest, Jack can probably play in about, you know, any of the five positions. If you're going in a 4-2-3, let's say, he can play in any of the two or the three. But to me, Jack should be going, okay, what do we need? What do Ireland need at the moment? They need Wes, right? I'm going to go and do my best Wes impression at every training session that I'm called into from now on. And that probably then, he would hope, would force the manager's hand, you know.
But I think, as Sean said there, there's only so much that Jack can do, you know, and it's most important that he's happy. He's obviously enjoying it at Rovers at the minute. You know, he's come home, whatever, he sort of, you know, kick-started his career again. And the only thing that Jack can do is just keep doing what he's doing, and that, you know, and, you know, because it's outside of his control to worry about, you know,
Mick McCarthy or anyone else.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So if it's, you know, once he keeps doing what he's doing or whatever, and, you know, he's happy in himself, whatever, you know, and he keeps producing, you know, on the pitch. Well, then obviously, you know, it's up to other people to make the decision as to where he's going to end up.
Lads, just before we move on, we should run through the results from last week. We had Waterford on Friday losing 1-0 at home to Finn Harps. That was on air. Derby City keeping up their impressive form, 3-0 win at home to Sligo Rovers. Bowes beat St Patrick's Leck 3-0 on Sunday. I'm going to come back to you on that, John, because I know you were there. Shamrock Rovers 7, UCD 0. So no damage for Rovers trying to play a game between two European ties. And then in the first division, we also had Athlone 1, Shelburne 2, Cabinteely 2, Longford 0, Galway 2, Bray Wanderers 2, Limerick 1, Drogheda 4, and then on Saturday we had Cove Ramblers 1, Wexford 1. You were at that game, Shane, I think, were you?
I was, Look, shit, no more than the lads, I'm sure you'd be trying to get a game in most weekends, so you wouldn't know. So I was at a gig on Friday night, so Saturday night was the night that I managed to get some soccer in. So yeah, I went down in that direction. I hadn't seen a huge amount of first division games this season. I think I'd only been seeing two others up until then, so yeah, I took a spin down that direction. Wouldn't be a million miles away from where I am.
Take a match in. Why not?
And look, it was decent. I'd say Cove would be disappointed, probably. They're having a reasonably good season, so they are, and obviously Wexford have been struggling at home to them, you would have thought, and they were well on top. Tip kind of a very regular pattern that you see in soccer. They were well on top until they scored, and then after they scored, for some reason, they kind of went very much back into their shell, and awful mistake, unfortunately, for the Wexford goal. And Wexford at least deserved a draw in the end. If not, Danny got a goal, as he does, but he actually missed a very good chance in the second half as well. Probably the best chance of the game that could have seen Wexford actually win the game. Yeah.
Well, you're very much around the scene at Bray. It's just results in recent weeks, they can't get any consistency going. Yeah. It just seems to be a bit of stop-start, very much so.
Look, to be fair, the performances have actually been quite good in that, you know. Like, and again, I just think we're probably, you know, maybe lacking in the final third or whatever, just having that cutting edge. And, you know, it's as I say, the performances have been, you know, quite good. But, you know, you get a win or two and then all of a sudden, maybe a draw or a defeat or whatever, you know. So it has been hard to get a little bit of momentum going in that, you know. But look, from Bray's perspective or whatever, you know, this year wasn't necessarily about what happened on the pitch, which is obviously very important. But from the overall objective of the club, it's just to stabilise it. And obviously John's been there in the past and it's been eventful, I suppose. But it's able to
John smiling here. It's very hard to summon up in one word, I think, to be fair, is it? Yeah.
But to be fair to Noel and that and the people who've come in with him and, you know, all the volunteers around the club and that, you know, like it's just about steadying the ship this year and, you know, laying the foundation for the future success of the club and that, you know. And it's, you know, I think, as I say, Gary's been a little bit unlucky in terms of the results. You know, we've sort of dominated a lot of games and again, just, you know, missed chances or, you know, just bounce of a ball, you know. It's been the difference between sort of maybe drawing games and winning games and that, you know. But but overall it's been a decent season and that, and to be fair, we're still within touching distance of the playoffs. So
yeah, 27 points, a gap has just suddenly opened up between fourth and fifth here, but I suppose it can all turn, you know. You have to get a bit of momentum going though,
That's the thing. Like, it's again, like, I went down to see Cavan Teely the other night against Longford and that, you know. And to be fair to Cavan Teely, like, you know, they've got an experienced backroom staff there with the looks of Devo and Eddie Gormley and, you know, Eddie Wallace is around and, you know, so those lads know what it takes to get out of first division and that, you know, like, and they're, you know, they're really well set up, very organised, and to be fair, they've got one or two really good players up top in that, you know, and obviously Rob Manning's had a good season in terms of the number of goals he scored and that, you know, so it's, you know, but if you look at it, you know, like, maybe Bar Shells in the last maybe sort of 12 games, everybody sort of being slightly inconsistent, so... Yeah. That would still give you hope that if you can put a run of three or four games together, you know, that you might still creep in or whatever.
Absolutely. Like you say, it's 7 points, and 7 points, you know, you are looking and going, that's quite a gap. But then immediately you look at the weekend's games, not to go too far ahead, but you look at the weekend's games and Bray at home, Tathlone, Bray would be hoping to win that. And then they're looking at Cavan Teely away to draw it, thinking it was a good chance draw it, could do him a favour. And all of a sudden, you know, you're potentially looking at the table the following morning and it's back to four again.
Yeah. We've got Limerick, Cove, Shells, Wexford on Saturday, Longford, Galway, just if people don't know the other fixtures. But yeah, it can change quickly, I guess.
I saw them away to Athlone and they were very impressive that night, Bray. Very impressive. I mean, when you go through the personnel within the team, it's an impressive lineup, so it is, you know, not just Keegan but McLeod, you know, you've got two very good young centre halves in Killian Cantwell and Sean Heaney as well. It's a decent side, and in fairness to Gary, I mean, it's what, Gary's first full season. He didn't have a full season last season. He's going to be learning on the job as well, so he is. And I think whether he gets up or not this year, as you say, this year is probably more so for him and the club about, right, let's put ourselves in a position where we can really, really go the following year.
Absolutely, and it's just about laying the foundations and bringing a little bit of stability to the club. And then obviously, you know, you'd hope that recruitment, you know, Gaz will sort of, you know, obviously the team and the squad will evolve obviously over time and that, you know. So it's now look, you know, as I say, obviously you want to be thereabouts come the end of the season. And from our point of view, it'd be great to be involved in the playoffs and that and see where it takes you. But certainly this year it's just about sort of steadying the ship.
John, are you missing the involvement as a League of Ireland player? You had your wedding coming in, what was that, last month? Yeah. Still got a bit of a wedding shine, a bit of sheen off you there. But I know I spoke to you at one point and you said maybe when you didn't get fixed up before the start of the season, you were sort of going to concentrate to a degree on that and you're back with Crumlin. But are you tempted to come back into the league? Is it something that would interest you?
Yeah, of course. I couldn't turn a good option down. It's a fantastic league. And like I tell everyone, you're probably insane if you don't want to play in it. You know, when you're playing sport, you don't play at the top level, there's something missing there. So yeah, if I got a good option, of course I'd go back.
Would that extend to the first division as well though, or would you be sort of very much thinking you want to go back in the Premier, or would you listen to a first division offer?
I love meeting new people and I love having conversations, but for me, it may sound very different, but I like to see the environment before I'm going to go into it. Last thing I want to do was agree to something that myself and whoever's in charge, we just have different values. And, you know, again, they say beggars can't be choosers, But I'm all about happiness, and you know, I want to be happy wherever I go.
It makes perfect sense. Like, I thankfully I can refer back to a piece of work that shows that I'm not just saying it because you're sitting opposite. But I went to the out of contract game that night, and I actually did a Times piece on the back of it. And John was the best player on the pitch that night. Absolutely was the best player. And I wrote that the following day in the article. I mean, you say, you know, Premier, First Division, whatever about the Premier, you look at those five teams that are battling for promotion out of the First Division, like, there's probably only a handful of players available at the moment who are game changers in terms of genuinely increasing your chances of going up. Mm. And John absolutely falls into that bracket. Like, I'll be cheeky, John, and throw it at you that, like, you're a player, even when you're talking here, you're a player that knows his mind, for want of a better way of putting it. Like, you think sometimes our manager's looking and going, oh,
I talk too much. I'm deadly serious. I don't doubt my ability. Like, any team I've played for, I've played. When fit, I've played. That's a fact.
See, I'm looking for the outside.
Maybe I just speak too much. I ask too many questions.
You've literally taken the words out of me. I'm looking from the outside, and I'm going, how can one of the top five teams in the First Division not have made a move? And then you look at coaching, and you look at managers, and it's uncomfortable to be questioned. It's uncomfortable to have to explain why you're telling people to do what they want to do rather than just telling them and then they do it. And I think managers know that if John's in the dressing room, he probably is. When they say do that, he probably is going to say why instead of doing it.
I generally like information.
Have you had meetings with managers? I'm not going to go into individuals.
No,
but
very, very
have
little.
Have you had chats? Where
very little.
No?
No. And I see it. We talk about coaching, and Will said it's a very difficult game. It is. It's very difficult. Because we're not coaching a specific thing in a sport or a specific sport. We're coaching people. And like you're saying, I very rarely see one-to-ones or actual communication. And for me personally, I just need to know the objective of the session. Because one day I want to be a coach. I am now. Well, I think myself as a coach. But I'd like to be able to explain something to somebody if I'm going to coach them. So when I'm going through an exercise, of course, I like things relatable to the game. So if I can understand it, it helps me then come Friday.
And you see, I would argue it's a good thing, because I've said at team meetings at the start of a season when you come in at a new club, or even just the start of a new season at the same club, I've said to players, you've got you to be concerned with. Me as manager has got 20 of you to be concerned with. So at times, I might forget to give you your fair share of the pie in terms of one-on-one time with me and enough feedback from me. So you take the bull by the horns. You come to me and say, here, listen, you haven't given me any feedback in the last week or two. Can we have a sit down there and can you give me a few bits and pieces? It needs to come from the player. The manager, you might think he's ignoring you. He's not ignoring you. He just has 101 things going on and he hasn't thought to give you the bit of feedback that you want. So instead of going, oh, he hasn't spoken to me or he hasn't given me any kind of tips in the last couple of weeks or he's not telling me why I'm out of sight, take the bull by the horns and be the person who goes to him. I think that's a good thing. I think it's definitely a good thing in John's case. I just throw it out there. Some people possibly...
Might think it's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
But at the same time, I try to look at it as a positive. You know, everything happens for a reason, and maybe this will bring me to a different path, coaching or whatever else.
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I enjoy it. Really enjoy it. I enjoy working with people in general. Like that question there, what goes on in someone's mind during a scenario? I ask that all the time. And you're fascinated when you hear an answer. Yeah. Some are like, don't know. And you're kind of like, okay, and you're a defender. Right.
Well, can you relate to that from dealing with players and you know the different personalities who think and don't think or whatever it might be?
Look, to be honest with you, like, I think I don't mean this about John per se, but you know, there's certainly a thing now whereby managers and coaches, you know, don't necessarily like dealing with, you know, difficult players. And I'm not for a second saying that John's a difficult player, but I'm just saying in general.
Oh, but there's some I am. That's a fact. Everyone has their opinion.
But even I, the younger ages, if you know what I mean, like, you speak to lads, whatever, and they're involved with teams and that, you know, and saying, gee, it's hard work, that lad. I was like, but you know, people are, you know, that's what coaching is. Like, you're dealing with a personality, whatever, you know, and it's too easy just to dismiss people. Dismiss people just, you know, because, you know, they might be challenging or whatever. And to be honest with you, and again, I say this against myself sometimes, you know, people don't necessarily like to be challenged all the time, if you like, you know. And you know, and the one thing about, obviously, and Shane, you know, will probably, attest to this, but when you're a manager in the league, you know, you're not just necessarily concerned with, you know, the team and the session. There's probably a million and one other things going on in the background, and, you know, you might have the headspace for it or whatever, and then all of a sudden you have a player coming over and you're saying, does this lad ever give me a break? Do you know what I mean? I'm, you know, But and that's just, you know, I don't know whether or not Shane would agree with that, whatever, you know, because there's so much going on in the background and that, you know. And again, because, you know, we're largely, even the full-time teams, we're sort of still operating in part-time setups, if you like. Even though the team, you might have a team of full-time players or whatever, from a manager's point of view and in terms of the structures of the club, there's probably very few clubs in the league that are, you know, that would have the support network and, you know, to make sure that the manager is just focused on performance of the team.
Yeah, 100%. Like, unfortunately, the phrase that comes to mind is a player who might be inquisitive and he would deem himself to be inquisitive, the manager's phrase would be, he'd fry your head.
Mm. You know, you're busy.
Yeah. And look, as you say, you've definitely hit the nail on the head in terms of the manager has 101 other things going on. But if the player comes to the manager, then the onus is on the manager.
Absolutely.
If it's not directly him, it's maybe the fall down in fitness. Well, right, let's get the fitness coach on it. Is it on technique? Okay, let's get first team coach on it, or a Ronan Murray on it if it's a striker or whatever.
And I would genuinely love to think that at these organisations, not League of Ireland, everything, that there's constantly coaches meetings once a week. Again, like a business. If we have a once a month, it's too late. Something happened 3 weeks ago. But once a week, how are those three doing? And your job today is those three and those four. Because again, one person can't do everything. We have to delegate.
Well, speaking of good coaching, lads, and I suppose good news stories, because we've had enough bad news stories in Irish football lately, and we are going to probably discuss some of them, because I know, Will, you were at the recent workshop, which actually maybe might be more of a positive gathering, you know, it's still stemming out of a bad spell. But we do have an Irish under-19 side in the European semi-finals this week, and John, I saw you put out a tweet about Tom Moen, that you'd worked with him as a coach at some stage, and we'll have a discussion. I mean, this is a great story. I mean, this is for people maybe who are just following the results, but they may not be aware that, I mean, this Irish under-19 team is missing some of the upwards of like 10, 12 players who would be in the squad. So actually, it's not really an Irish under-19 team. It's an Irish under-19 team with under-18, under-17 in terms of the ages. And I think, like, Tom Moen doesn't have we had Tom in here previously. He's not someone who would ever be described as brash or someone who sort of, you know, screams from the rooftops. And I don't think you're going to have people going around trying to put Tom Moen's name forward for Stumpton or anything like that, when actually another manager that brought a team to a semi-final, you imagine there'd be a different hype around them. But he's done exceptionally well, and his staff, of course, as well, too. John, you worked with Tom Moen. What was your impressions of him? I think you said almost less is more to some degree.
Yeah, I remember he was with the home base side when I was like 15, 16. I couldn't get into the senior, the international side again. But the summer wasn't good enough. And he would just have a small conversation. He'd just watch, he'd observe everything. He'd always be smiling. He'd literally physically put his arm around you. You know, he'd be like, how are you? And how are you feeling? And if you've done something, he'd be like, really fantastic, keep doing that. And why not try this into your game? That was once we played in the World Cup, I made a run. Semi-final, I was offside. And I scored, but I was offside. And he says to me straight after, do that 3 times a half, you'll score a goal. Done again, a final, but I scored. But only when he said that to me, I was like, okay. That's something new I can add to my game. And luckily enough, then I got to work with him in the 17s. And like I tweeted, like, I remember very little of what he said, but he always made you feel good. You know, you walk around on your toes, your chest is up. It was just the energy he'd give off.
Well, what does this mean for?
It's great.
There, Will. Sorry,
to be fair, like, if you like, I had the pleasure of working with Tom, and I worked for the FAI and that, you know, and he's a brilliant person and that, you know, and he's always has time for everybody, and for me, that's the key to certainly underage development. Give kids confidence. It's as simple as that. You know, if you instill confidence in a kid, you know, it's better than a whole season of sessions, if you know what I mean. So if a kid comes into your environment, whatever, and he feels confident to you know, play his game, obviously within little sort of structures or whatever, you know, you'll get the best out of him. And again, if you look at, you know, what Stephen Kenny has done, obviously with the 21s, you know, relatively overnight. Again, I know Stephen say hello to, I wouldn't know him personally, but speaking to some of the lads who are away, you know, they loved it, if you like, you know, because he gave them that confidence. Tom is the same. And when you go all the way down through the international managers, you know, we've got some brilliant people involved in football in this country and that, you know, and unfortunately they're not the ones who make the headlines. But when you look at it, like, I think 16 of the squad are actually Irish born. So they've come through our system here, you know. And for us to achieve what we constantly achieve, you know, sort of year after year, you know, like, people working at underage level, be it schoolboy or in the underage League of Ireland setups now, they're doing unbelievable work, you know, and we're absolutely punching above our weight given the resource that we have available to us, you know. So it's look, it's great, you know, it's great to see the lads doing well, whatever, you know, and as you say there, it's probably, you know, there's probably 10 players that maybe, you know, if Tom was to pick from everybody that he had available to him, you know, that was eligible, you know, there might have been maybe 8, 9, 10 players that wouldn't be there this week. But again, I think I actually tweeted a couple of weeks ago, it was great that other lads have got an opportunity. Yeah. And to be fair, the lads have taken it, you know. And again, that's part of their development now, you know.
That's a fantastic thing. That's a fantastic thing about sport.
Yeah.
And it actually upset me the first game. I don't know which commentator said it. Oh, if we only had, and I was like, will you just shut up?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And focus on the positives. Let the kids play, like, you know.
That's clearly what Tom has done, focused on the positives, because, you know, the players are playing with such confidence and such freedom that I'd say he has never once mentioned.
Yeah, I think so. I think the lads over there, I know Mark Catton's over there, and one or two, I'm pretty sure I heard one of them say that, like, he hasn't been saying it in interviews. And you know that a certain type of manager, in a particular situation, they will always accentuate the negative in the sense of, well, if I had those six players...
Yeah. And we talked about confidence. If your own manager said, if only I had X, Y, and Z, you're like, all right, thanks.
But this was the problem with Martin O'Neill's Ireland sometimes, that he constantly spoke about what players couldn't do. Mm. And that's fine to a point, but it just became... Yeah. Again and again, and you can just imagine the players being told all the time, you're not that good, you know.
And the thing about it is, like, there's a lazy narrative, you know, out there that there's no players in Ireland. There's loads of players in Ireland, and the people who are saying that, you know, they've no experience in terms of Irish football. You know, they sit wherever they sit, not necessarily in this country, or whatever. They might come in and do punditry for RTE every now and again, and they say there's no players coming through. There's plenty of players coming through. Thing about youth development is it's about opportunity. And to be fair to Stephen, to be fair to Tom. And the lads underneath them, they're giving players an opportunity now. There's a little bit of a pathway now. So, again, you promote the best players, the best 16, 17, 18-year-olds. You know, again, going back to the Toulon tournament with Stephen Kenny, you know, I think when you looked at the Brazil squad, which was obviously a very, very good side compared to the Irish squad, probably on average, there was probably 2 years in the difference. You know, and the fact that we competed so well, and you have the looks of Jason Knight there, you know, who's probably... Jason's a 2001.
Yeah.
You know, playing against effectively like an under-22 team. So... there's definitely players there. I think the challenge for us is now, how do we sort of, you know, create the playing opportunities really for these lads to get them to the next level, you know?
Mm. But we are, since the negative for us is the massive positive, Troy Parra playing the weekend for Sports Senior Team.
Yeah.
And many others will come like him.
Mm.
You know, so I don't think we should be giving out as much. We should be very, very happy.
Oh, 100%.
We've done our job.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. There's unbelievable work going on in that, you know, but sometimes people... I think are a little bit late, you know. There's loads of players coming through. Mm. And even when you look at the reasons why the players aren't available for this particular tournament, it's because they're all involved with their first teams elsewhere for pre-season, which again is another massive positive. So all of a sudden, if you look at that under 19 squad, now I know it's made up of lads from 99 and 2000, but there's probably 30 players there now that are sort of, you know, 35 players maybe, you know, playing at a really good level every week. And that, you know, so again, the challenge for us is, how can we get lads from the 19s now into the 21s and from the 21s into the senior international team?
Yeah, because we spoke a while back, and sorry to go into it, it's obviously been a massive year for Irish football, and probably a bad year for Irish football still, unfortunately, in the context of everything that's gone on above. But you've been involved in some of the discussions that have taken place over the last period of time. You put in a submission when people were invited to make submissions. This was around the governance review group's submission, and it was obviously different types and you know, people went different ways with their submissions. You were involved in putting together one, which sort of laid out your bit of your vision. I mean, I read it; it was very good. Could you maybe outline maybe some of the key things you were looking? I know it's a broad topic, but as much as
well, look, possible. To be honest with you, like when they, you know, I suppose when Sport Ireland and the FAI sought, you know, submissions, you know, we basically sort of just decided, you know, well, look, we all sort of have an opinion on it, and we all think we've an idea of what should happen. So, you know, if you're given an opportunity to change something, well, then take the opportunity. You know, I think there's too many people that will just, you know, they'll moan and they'll give out, but they're not proactive about it. So, you know, it was actually myself and Keith Long.
I was going to say, it was Keith Long that you worked with. Yeah.
Yeah. So we basically sent in a submission into the governance review group. And, you know, so it's, but basically we're just outlining it again. I suppose the key things from our point of view is that, you know, we wanted to give, say, a football perspective as such, and not just necessarily a submission from administrators.
Mm.
Because every different faction within the game, they all have their own sort of issues and their own points of view, you know, depending on where they sit in the grand scheme of things, you know. So, and just in relation to, I suppose, our submission or whatever, we were basically saying, like, you know, that, like, now is the time, you know, to... you know, basically to not necessarily the separation of, you know, say high performance football and grassroots football, but because you want to try and bring everybody together because everybody has a part to play for the greater good, if you like. But, you know, the one size fits all to Irish football won't work anymore, you know, so you can't, you know, you can't treat everybody the same. And I know I keep saying it, but even from a kid's point of view, there's two different types of kids. You've got kids who want to be footballers and then you've got kids who just love playing football. So you can't treat them the same, if you like, you know, because there's different needs there. So I suppose the basis of, from our point of view, you know, we would have had strong opinions and beliefs in relation to, you know, how we think we can develop the game as such. And then obviously, I suppose we would have had strong opinions and views as to, I suppose, the organisational structure.
Yeah.
In terms of the FEI, and, you know, we probably felt that maybe the football voice was maybe missing from the, you know, from, say, the old regime, if you like, the old structure. So, yeah, so.
Yeah, and are you happy with what's happened now then over the last, I mean, were you happy with the final report that was produced, which has been approved effectively now?
Yeah, look, I think the best thing to come of all this is that there's a spotlight being shone on the whole, you know, the whole game effectively now, and that, you know, and I think there is probably a willingness to change. Having read the governance report, I think it's, you know, obviously it's very specific in relation to the elections of members and what have you. But I think overall it's probably a fairly generic, good governance report that could be implemented in any sort of organisation, if you like, you know. And it is important to have those checks and balances there, you know, because it does, you know, strong governance is, you know, an important part of operating a healthy organisation and that, you know. So, but overall, I think the governance report was quite good. And I think, you know, the fact that the numbers of people on the council has been increased to include, for example, the players and, you know, the, you know, other different factions that wouldn't maybe have had a voice in the past, I think that's been a positive as well.
And like, it's really, really brilliant that Will, you know, people who are so involved in the game, like Will and Keith, have taken the bull by the horns and done that. I would hope that Will's equivalent, if there's such a thing, are people like Will and Keith from outside of Dublin. I don't know who got submissions in, who didn't. I'd really hope that people from outside of Dublin got decent submissions in as well, because it, from all my underage involvement, having been kind of down Kilkenny Leash kind of area, what works for a player in Dublin is very, very different to what works for a player outside of Dublin or even the Dublin catchment area, if you know what I mean. And I think it's not that it's two separate pathways, but they are very, very different
scenarios.
That's a
good point. That's a good point. I think that there's a danger that a lot of the debate around schoolboy football in Ireland is very Dublin-centric. And I think, you know, I think you were part of a discussion recently with your colleagues from Belvedere and St. Kevin's. It was on Off the Ball. It was a very good discussion. But if I was to pick one criticism, it was like, it's just missing that small bit of that regional voice.
That was exactly my thought in the back of it. Because you say that was an absolutely excellent discussion, so it was. But yeah, if you could have shoved, you know, somebody from another big city, a Cork or a Galway, and somebody from a middle of nowhere, as we'd call ourselves, and say.
So, what is the different challenge? What is it there? You tell us what's the difference.
Well, I suppose the biggest problem outside, and it can still be a problem in Dublin as well. The biggest problem outside is that you need to make it more attractive to a 13, 14 year old. I mean, to put it very bluntly, right? We would have had a kid down in my area. And let's say he's the best soccer player in the county by a country mile, okay? And he's also the best hurler in the county by a long shot, all right? He could go 3-4 years around Laois without anybody knowing he plays soccer, almost, if you know what I mean. He will be in the paper pretty much every weekend, back page of it after scoring the winning goal, all this. He'll get unbelievable amount of coverage and pats on the back for doing well in hurling. Nobody will even hear of what he's doing in soccer. Okay, that feeds into a chap's mindset. You know, if he's getting to 16, 17, and now it's time to go one direction or the other, you know, that's a big problem, so it is. And the amount of really, really promising footballers who have been lost, I don't know if lost is the right word, but have ended up playing GEA.
You just mentioned Padraig Cunningham.
Yeah, well, Podge, there you are. Podge is even further down the track. But even, you know, you take it back, some of the Kilkenny senior hurling team, I mean, some of them were absolutely fantastic soccer players. David Clifford, by all accounts, the Kerry footballer, was supposed to be an
But what did they lack then? Did they lack, you know, a national team, your team competing on a national level in their region, or what was it?
I think some of the things have been fixed. I think
the new structure, to be fair, has addressed a lot of those issues, and certainly, you know. Like, I think it's been brilliant. Like, overall, again, look, it's far from perfect or whatever.
It's not a common view. I mean, one of the points that would have been raised in that chat was the amount of thrashings that have been handed out, which certainly isn't ideal.
Yeah.
But my argument would be, I'm just raising it, well, what's the solution here?
Yeah.
You know, like...
Well, I think the thing about it is, Dan, there's not really that many heavy defeats, to be fair. By and large, the games have been really competitive in that, you know. And again, if I look at it from, say, a schoolboy point of view, if we were playing a team in the All-Ireland from wherever around the country, you know, it would be highly likely that you would go down and win by double figures, to be honest with you. For us to go down now, you know, with effectively the same group of players, obviously representing Bray Wanderers now in the academy, and for us to go down and play Waterford, Club Kildare, you know, Sligo, whoever, Derry, Finn Harps, you know, for us to, you know, and again, it's not about results, but for us to even, you know, to get a draw of a game, we've got to perform well, you know. So, like, it's definitely raised the standard in that, you know. And again, it's, you know, so I think it's... you know, I think some of the concerns that Shane had there, I think they've sort of largely been addressed by the introduction of the underage leagues, sort of certainly provincially, if you like, you know. And it's definitely raised the standard and the bar in terms of, you know, the quality of play.
And that's fair, because I'm given my experience on underage football, and my experience in underage football was before the underage leagues came in. So, yeah, that's fair. It's definitely a huge, huge step in the right direction that there just needs to be... It needs to be seen as a bigger thing, I suppose, really, is the way I'm trying to phrase it down. And like, the addition of Kilkenny Carlow, I know there was probably a lot of debate as to whether they should be in or not, considering there's no League of Ireland side there. But from being around that area, that's been absolutely fantastic for soccer in the area. It really, really has.
Well, I think that's positive. I mean, the point I was going to come to you on, Will, a second ago was, I mean, the DDSL, though, have gone back to a winter league.
Yeah.
In terms of, does that present complications now for someone involved with a League of Ireland club?
Not really. Look, it would be preferable if the two seasons were aligned, you know, so...
You feel they might have abandoned it too quickly?
Yeah, they did. And again, the issue, you know, for me, the issue wasn't the concept, it was the implementation. Like, you can't have a league... whereby you've got, like, a calendar season league, you know, which is effectively summer football, with a 3-month break in the middle of it. You know, because people are losing interest, kids are losing interest, you know. And again, it comes back to the thing, Dan, about the two different types of kids. Kids who want to be footballers will play football every single day of the year, every week of the year. Kids who are, like, you know, who like playing football, you know, if it's a nice, you know, you wake up on a Sunday morning or whatever, and it's, you know, it's lovely out, it's the middle of the summer, you're getting phone calls and texts off parents saying, look, can't make it today because we're doing something with the family, you know. And that was the challenge for the DDSL. But again, it comes back to, there's two different sets of needs or whatever, you know, and you need to accommodate that, if you like, you know. So the one size fits all approach doesn't work anymore, you know. And that's where I think the underage stuff has been quite good in terms of, say, the schoolboy stuff. I actually, you know, if I had an option of whether to stay calendar season based on what we had, say, last year, or and go back to the traditional season, I absolutely would have agreed with that, because you get more kids playing football throughout the year.
I always ask myself the question of 17s and 19s, elite fit, with the break during season, what happens? Like, they've got leaving certs, they've got junior certs. Where is their mind at? Like you're saying, some of them may not want to be footballers, but they're just good, so they play at that level.
Yeah.
And then even the standard alone, like, how does that differentiate before and after the break? Is that a positive, like...
You know, again, even like, if you take us, even with the 19s and Bray this year, I think probably most of that squad would be 2001, which would effectively be under 18. So I think we had probably 13 lads doing the leaving cert this year. So from our point of view, you've got to make sure that the leaving cert is more important. It's as simple as that in the short term. So you have to give the kids the space that they need to study and get their head right or whatever, like, you know, and take the pressure off, whilst also making sure that, you know, that the football is there to give them exercise and everything else, if you know what I mean, during an important part of their life, you know. So it's, so, you know, I do think when you're doing exams or whatever, it's slightly different, whatever, it's just has to be managed differently. But I think the key to it is, certainly from the, if you look at the calendar season point of view, like, it's definitely, and I don't know whether or not John would agree, you know, it's, you know, it's great from a coaching point of view and a playing point of view when you're training in daylight and, you know, you're on the grass more, and, you know, it's a, I think it's just, it creates a better sort of environment and culture, whatever. Whereas, you know, when it's in the winter and that, you know, clubs probably don't have the facilities that they need, the grass facilities and everything else, you know. So it's a, I think it's probably, from the League of Ireland point of view, I think it's, is still probably the better option.
Just time is sort of moving on here. You were at the workshop a couple of weekends ago. Yep. It was the Noel Mooney hosted FEI event where there was a lot of discussions about the direction of the league. Kieran Lucid got to make a proposal. Niall Quinn's group made a proposal. What was your impression of the event? What was your mood coming away?
Very positive. You know, to be fair, I didn't really know what to expect going in, to be honest with you. You know, I think obviously when you look at the people who spoke over the course of the weekend, I think you know it was very impressive or whatever. I think obviously Noel Quinn came in with his group, the visionary group. They've got a lot of impressive people there that are well connected in business and other areas. You know, I think Noel, as he said himself, they were basically offering that group, you know, and the service of that group as a resource to help the league going forward. Which is great, you know, because again, I think, you know, there's a lot of sort of influential people involved in that group or whatever in different sectors, which would certainly open up doors of opportunity for the league. I think Kieran came in then, you know, after that. I thought his presentation was very good, it was very detailed. You know, I think he's thought of a lot of eventualities. Again, he sort of, you know, he made so, you know, there was a lot of sort of substantive detail there as to how they were going to achieve their goals and that, you know. So I would have been very, very impressed with that, you know. Although I do think, you know, and he made no bones about it. And again, personally speaking, I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, they were effectively, I think they're probably looking for, say, the top 10 clubs in the country, you know, to push on now and try and develop like a professional league. And for, say, the other clubs, the Braves of this world or whatever, you know, I'm not saying to know their place, but, you know, to become effectively development clubs, you know, which again is fine because again, if we're one of the things that we did this year in Bray, like, you know, when you're looking at how to make the club sustainable, you know, we're never going to compete with a Shamrock Rovers or a Dundalk or a Pats, do you know what I mean? So, you know, we need to decide what, you know, how we can contribute or whatever. And obviously, that's not to say that you don't have aspirations or whatever, but you've got to be realistic as well. Otherwise, you end up with clubs in trouble. So I certainly think that the All-Ireland League proposal was very good. But it's certainly based around the 10 strongest clubs, if you like.
Yeah.
And then bringing in the clubs from the north. So that was a very good proposal. I think the people that Noel Mooney had in from UEFA were very good. They were looking at it, you know, sort of from a neutral point of view. And they sort of discussed how they felt the league could expand and improve and, you know, develop commercially, if you like, you know. And ironically enough, one of the key areas that they highlighted would have been... you know, training compensation for players moving on.
Yeah.
You know, so get players in, develop them through the academy system, give them a platform to perform at first team level, and then hopefully, you know, sell them on to different markets, you know, so.
Based on what you heard on the day, is it doable, is it possible for the Lucid group and the Quinn group to both be involved in moving it forward together, or is it a you kind of scenario, or what way was it painted?
It wasn't really like that, to be fair. I think, you know, now, again, I don't know whether or not Kieran Lucid would have his own ideas and that, whatever, you know, but certainly, you know, it was, I think there's certainly a place for everybody to, you know, there's a place for everybody to try and help develop the game in the country and that, you know, and again, it was a very open meeting. It was very honest. You know, I think Noel Quinn actually said that, you know, that he would have been a big fan of the Kieran Lucid proposal, you know, so, and again, I think he offered his help, you know, in any way that he could. But again, generally speaking, I think people were basically there just to say, right, you know, we are where we are now. How can we move this forward for the, you know,
it's a positive debate. John, is bringing John in this. John, have you been following this, like this whole debate about the structures of the league? Some people, very little, to be honest.
It's a lot of uncontrollables for me. So,
That's fine. Like I think there's so much going on. There's so much at stake here. I'm not sure if people have grasped how quickly things could change.
Yeah.
Structurally, you're talking about the Kieran Lucid plan, like I think it's very interesting, but you're sort of talking about disbanding the League of Ireland as it currently stands. Yeah. Like, you know, all of a sudden you're going into something dramatic. And I'm not saying that's a reason not to do it at all, by the way. I'm not saying that at all. But like, I think this is such a potentially seismic change.
Yeah. How would that then affect the youth systems?
Well, that's...
where they've been talking about how great Tom Mowen's doing and the Irish youth systems... So how would that
the control of the underage leagues is a
will remain probably with the FEI,
which is a talking point in itself. Because if you have a national senior league, you know, how do they interact? Yeah. There was also the women's league, and where did that stand in the whole thing too? So like, this is the thing. I think the idea is fantastic. It's maybe the timelines that might just be unrealistic because there's so much to go through.
I'd also question whether, I mean, Will has talked brilliantly there in terms of how he would see Bray potentially their role within this, and he said development or whatever way you phrased it, and that, you know, we have to be realistic and realize we're not going to compete. I think an awful lot of clubs might shy away from that. I think some clubs that hear you say, you know, we become a team that, you know, we're not quite operating, we don't have aspirations, and others are going, no, you know, we won't buy into anything that means that we can't, you know, fix everything overnight with...
What do you make of it, Shane? What do you make of the ideas that have been discussed?
I'm still very, not sketchy, but I think the stumbling block, obviously, I've said it before, I think the stumbling block is the European places and how they're going to get around that, and whether, now maybe there's enough money involved here that getting into Europe no longer becomes the be-all and end-all, and maybe that's why everybody's willing to buy into it.
And it wouldn't be, to be fair to Ciarán, the figures that he presented, you know, whoever finished last in the new Premier League, if you like, you know, that would be the equivalent of...
Qualifying for the
Europa League at the moment. So again, from that point of view, it's you know, that sort of takes that off the agenda.
Does that kill the youths coming through? Because I'd like to think, from a player, the only chance, or some of the reasons why we get chances, our youths get chances, is clubs don't have money to bring in all their experienced players. Mm. But now if they have all this money coming in from coming last, who says they're not going to get League 2 players, League 1 players, 28, 29, 31?
Well, again, this is the classic debate of what do clubs in Ireland do when they get money. It's like, you know, like do they always spend it well? You would hope that the fact is that the clubs are still going to have those underage structures, so you know, that they recognise the value of it. Now.
And the thing about it is, Dan, you've got to make academy football pay, because unless something is, you know, worthwhile doing from a financial and a business model point of view, why would you do it?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, it's about money, if you know what I mean. So. Like, again, if you go back to the ECA report, like the European Club Association report into academies there a few years ago, like most Category 2 countries, of which we would be one, you know, they view their academies as, you know, adding economic value to the club, you know. And, you know, so we just, you know, I don't think there's any alternative at the minute. Like, we've basically been doing the same thing for the last 60, 70, 80 years, whatever, and it's not, you know, it's not improved. You know, it's not improved, you know.
That's key, like, that's
if you don't change what you're doing, well then, you know.
Like, you would say, 80, 90% of the clubs in the League of Ireland at the moment view their underage setup as a financial burden.
But it is at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's where the FAI have to change, if you know what I mean. Because again, I would question, if I have to go to Niall O'Driscoll and ask for a justification of spending 120,000 a year, and we've got no protection around that investment, why would you do it?
Yeah.
You know, and so there has to be protections put in from the FAI in relation to having an academy. You want to try and incentivize clubs, you know, to take your development seriously.
Yeah.
Because again, there is no incentive at the minute, if you know what I mean. So, and that's where you have, say, you know, some of the heavier defeats, because some clubs take it more seriously than others, if you like.
Yeah.
You know, so there's all these sort of issues around it, if you like, you know. And again, they don't all cost money. They're more sort of structural than anything else. You know, so it's so I think from that point of view, And that's why, you know, I obviously got involved in the game. I never played at that level, whatever, but I obviously got involved in coaching. But the one thing I've learned over the last 10 years, working full-time in it, is that if we don't get the off-field stuff right, John...
Completely agree.
Well, then, you know, it's no use to the lads on the pitch, if you know what I mean. And that's ultimately what it's about. It's about trying to provide the right environment, you know, to give players in this country the best platform to maximise their potential.
Yeah, and one of the massive things as a player, what I've really appreciated with playing the likes of Bray over the last... number of years, you've now got Carrick Moyns.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal. Like, it just makes the club that little bit better.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of clubs that don't even have their own training ground.
I was stuck at one of them there.
Yeah, well, you know the problem. This weekend's games, lads. In the Premier Division, we've got UCD Waterford on Friday, Finn Harps Derry City on Friday. On Saturday, the rescheduled due to Europe, St Pat's and Dundalk at 5:30 in Inchicore Saturday evening, because Dundalk... So travel to Azerbaijan on Monday. Sligo Rovers and Bowes also on Saturday. That's live on Air Sport. And then on Sunday, another rescheduled game, Cork City, Shamrock Rovers, 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Shamrock Rovers are... Finn Harps Derry is also live on Air Sport, I should say, as well. And Shamrock Rovers rescheduled again because of their European commitments. John, you were at Bowes Pats on Sunday, actually, just to ask you about it, because it's a 3-0 win for Bowes. Some of the commentary afterwards, from people suggesting it wasn't a 3-0 game, but what was... You might have a slightly different take on it. What was your feeling?
I thought it was a good game. Pats had chances through Dean Clark. He was very good for Pats. I thought he was Pats' best player. Bowes just kept catching him on counters. I think every Bowes goal came from a Pat's chance, and he just flipped it around and came straight down the throat. It was a great game. People talking about European hangovers. Rovers proved there isn't any. with a 7-0 thumping.
Pats are just struggling generally, maybe. I mean, it might just be that. It's, you know, they lost 3 days after being in Sweden, but and okay, maybe their performance wasn't that bad, but it's a big loss. They're 8 points behind third spot now, and they're struggling a bit, Shane. I don't know. I mean, they've actually had some good results in the league in recent weeks, but that was a big win for Bowes in the context of this wider European picture, because Derry are starting to hit a bit of form as well too.
Yeah, it really, really was. And look, they are, you know, they're a team who at the start of the season, you saw the strength of the personnel that they were recruiting, and there was such a buzz around the club. I think opening games, you know, they had massive crowds in for it and the whole lot, and for whatever reason, it just hasn't kind of fallen into place for them. I don't think they're, you know, they're far from a poor side. They're not kind of struggling, I suppose, in the way that Waterford are struggling a little bit more, but there's just something missing. Obviously, goals is the something that's missing, because they look very well structured and they're very hard to score against. Well, they were up until the weekend, I suppose.
Yeah, they've got a lot of individual brilliance, a lot of ability. Yeah. Like, that's something you wouldn't question, but that's not what I lose in games.
Mm. Yeah. You were praising Keith Buckley, his contribution on Sunday.
Phenomenal player. Like, it's one of those things, you watch the game, you miss him. You watch him, you see it all. Like, he's bringing players into areas, and he's freeing up space for Keith Ward. Mm. And then he's freeing up space for Wade Slater to come in on inside from the right, who then assisted in the goal, in the first goal. But I think he's phenomenal. And that's something I think players need to... We talk about creativity, which is fantastic, and we need to encourage it. But also the flip side of it is there's players like Keith Buckley who knows his role and does it. And me personally, I think if Pat's had Keith Buckley... They wouldn't be in the positions they're in.
And players like that are undervalued, John, aren't they?
Completely undervalued. And as something I was looking at the weekend, it's a thing we see on social media where if a kid scores a goal, we get a picture above them. And I was watching the Bowes game, and this came to mind. I was like, Keith Buckley doesn't score goals.
Yeah.
So a kid of his ability or his characteristics, they'll never have plaudits on social media at the age of 12, 13, 16. And it's something we need to keep recognising and applauding.
I mean, you hear, I'm sure we used to hearing in coaching lingo, you hear the phrase a lot, you know, how many energizers have you in your dressing room? How many de-energizers do you have in your dressing room? You know, and if that balance is the wrong way around, you're in big, big trouble. I don't know Keith Buckley that well, but just watching him from the outside, he strikes me as being one of the ultimate energizers.
He sets the standard. It's short passing, long passing, when to run long, when not to run long. As the game opened up, the 60-minute mark, it's very exciting as a fan. It's counter-attacking. Once you got the ball from his left hand side, opened up and realised 1 versus 4. No, I'm going to cry if I come back out and keep it. So I was like, brilliant, he knows his role. Mm. Someone else would have went down the throat, lost, and you can see it.
Yeah.
Is it a bit like someone like Chris Shields who knows his role within the Dundalk side?
Yeah. You know, yeah. And the only thing Keith is missing is a trophy for him to get more recognition. I hope this year he gets a trophy.
Dundalk Carabag on Wednesday, lads. I mean, we know Carabag are a good team, but we might necessarily know a huge amount about the attributes of the team. The description is that there may be more, they might move the ball quickly. They're maybe different to Riga, who are more strong and physical. I don't know how we feel they'll fare. I mean, it's...
I think, Dan, like, if you look at, say, Dundalk scenario, I think once you get through that first round, I'm not saying the pressure's off as such, but there's always huge pressure on, you know, the league champions going into the first round of the Champions League qualifier. You know, so I think the pressure's off slightly. I think it probably suits us, to be honest with you, being the underdog, if you like, you know, where we can sort of get in behind the ball and maybe hit them on the counter a little bit. I always find, you know, at all levels of the game in this country, when the onus is on us to go and break teams down, that's where we struggle a little bit, you know. So, you know, so I'd be, you know, quietly confident for Dundalk that they'll, you know, that there'll be more of a match for them.
You look at that last week and, you know, you look at how things played out. Is that a positive or is it negative in that? Do you look and you go, Dundalk were far from their best? Or do you go, Dundalk were far from their best and still got through?
It could be liberating for them now. That's almost a sense of...
there's massive pressure in that game.
Yeah.
You know.
I have to say, like, being over in Latvia for that, like, the pressure, the tension in the ground, like, it was actually a horrible game, really, like, for large periods of the game. Because there was this inevitability about where it was going, but I'm sure, like, at various levels, you've all been in situations where you almost just know that this game is just about not making mistakes. Yeah. It just became one of those matches where it was like, we just can't make any errors here, and you see it out. And it is funny, if Dundalk had lost that penalty shootout on Wednesday, I think there would have been a bruising fallout. I just think there would have been a sense of, you've missed a chance to beat a team you're probably better than.
And in
this round,
it was going to be a tough challenge. I mean, the guy he had on a couple of weeks ago, he called it absolutely perfectly, didn't he?
That's how Riga actually play. Like that's their 100%,
because he'd said it, and I was having a look to see, you know, would you have a bit of a bet on it maybe or something, and I was looking and I checked their previous games and they'd scored quite a few goals in the previous games, and I was going, does this lad know his stuff at all? And then you watch two games and he absolutely knew his stuff. They were 100% set up that way. It was very hard then for Dundalk to really, like, they couldn't, if that was a league game where if it doesn't work out for you, you've got more league games coming and it's not the end of the world, Dundalk would have thrown everything at it. They would have thrown the kitchen sink at it. But they couldn't. You know, they couldn't gamble that much by just throwing everything at it. And it was a real kind of knife-edge game, I can imagine, as you say.
And again, I think if you look at the business model of that club going forward, like, you know, it's important that they do have a certain element of European success to keep the kitchen along.
There's no dispute in that. Yeah. They just have to. They have the biggest wage bill in the country now, and they're guaranteed $1.2 million for getting through, but that doesn't remotely cover their wage bill. So they have to. They almost have to aspire to get through that round every year, which involves winning the league every year too.
Absolutely.
You know? So,
well, I think the thing about Dundalk this week, whatever, you know, I think the shackles are off a little bit, and I'll be very, very surprised if we don't see an improvement in the performance, if you like, whatever about the results, because obviously their opponents are very, very strong with a good European calibre or whatever. But I'd fully expect Dundalk to play well and be more of a match for them.
And we talk about Jack Bourne and creativity. Yeah. They've got a lot of players who haven't turned it on yet. In Europe, that is, of course, you've only had two games.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, this could be the week.
Who are you thinking of there, John McElhenney?
Well, there's McElhenney, there's Michael Duffy, there's Jamie McGrath. You know,
McGrath's a very talented player.
Fantastic player. Yeah. And it's beautiful to watch them, an intricate passing, and that's how we're hoping to score goals.
In the last couple of years, who is the most challenging player you played against in the league? Maybe that's, you know, who did you always find, God, this is going to be tough?
Patrick McElhenney. You know he's going to do, he just can't stop him.
Yeah.
You're like, I know he's going to shim in his left and go on his right. And then he just does it and you're like, oh.
Yeah. And he has, like, you're right, he hasn't.
And he stands you up and you're like, oh, he stopped the ball, now I have a chance. You don't have a chance. There's players like him and Jack Bourne, you actually prefer them to keep the ball moving. Mm. Where others, you're like, all right, you've stopped the ball, they've slowed it down, and now I have a chance to win it. They can just go.
You must be barking at the players around you to try and just stop the ball into them. It's like, I can't stop him once he gets it, so you need to stop it.
It's literally just cut it off source for me. I'm playing these people.
It's important. I mean, it's a strange one, though, because obviously, like, Shamrock Rovers have a big game on Thursday against Apollon Limassol as well, and hopefully that's well supported. But there is still this question mark, Will, about, like, the inequality in the league too. So it's great that Dundalk and Rovers do well, but they get more money. Yeah. And the more money that they get gives them a position of power when it comes to winter. Shane, you looking to come in here, like, next winter. I mean,
but Cork had it for a couple of years.
Cork have wasted it. Cork have wasted it. I mean, this is the problem.
I think that's just professional sport. Like, it's not a level playing field, to be honest with you. You know, and it's just I do think there's a small argument to be made for the redistribution.
Was that raised at the weekend? Or the weekend just gone?
It was, to be fair, and again. You know, it wasn't necessarily, I thought it would have been shut down immediately by the clubs who were involved at that level, but, you know, it wasn't shut down, if you know what I mean. But again, I think it was the chap from Sligo made the point, you know, and it was based on the fact that, say, you know, their league programme and clubs who weren't involved in Europe were obviously, you know, they may miss out on home fixtures and everything else, whatever, and that money should be redistributed.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that not what they do in Holland?
This is something that's been discussed now. It's only a recent development, I think.
It's only last year.
Yeah. Now, the only argument you would make there is that, I mean, Ajax got to the Champions League final, so the amount of money they got for sort of telephone number stuff, as opposed to a club getting 400 grand and sort of giving, X amount of it to their rivals.
But then, just on that, again, it's important because that money was ring-fenced for youth development.
Well, this is, I think if there's a ring-fencing of the money, I think it's a different story. For grounds or absolutely. For some sort of,
because the thing about it is, like, and this is the point that people miss, like we are the only ones that have a vested interest in developing the next generation of players. For all the clubs, like, all the clubs have a vested interest in that. So the better quality player we can develop going forward, you know, it means everybody will benefit, if you like, you know. So it will mean the likes of, at the minute, the Dundalks and the Rovers and whoever else in Europe.
They're going to sign them all eventually anyway.
Exactly. Well, yeah, but the thing about it is, but even with that, like, the more money that's flown around the league in terms of cash flow, you know, that will filter its way down to other clubs, if you like, you know. So it's so even though people will say, oh, look, the gap's getting bigger or whatever, but you'd like to think that some of that money will trickle, you know, find its way down to other clubs in terms of, you know, maybe, you know, clubs are buying the better players from other clubs and what have you, you know. So, look, the bottom line is the more money involved in the league, the better for everybody, I think.
Look, and I know we're getting close to the end of it, and you don't want to come kind of finishing negative.
Don't worry, you're totally replacing Johnny Ward if we're getting towards the end of the show and you just introduce, now what about, you know, well, what about human rights issues somewhere? It's like a 15-minute debate. So like,
No, not that bad. No, but like, we're chatting away here and everything is kind of fine in the world because we have two teams through to next round. I mean, were a Jamie McGrath miss penalty and a Jack Byrne not coming up with an inspirational piece of play from having nobody.
Yep.
It was, you know, really, really fine margins. And then we are probably questioning absolutely everything if we'd had nobody.
But Shane, everything isn't fine in the world because the thing about it is we have dropped 10 places in the coefficient in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So again, sometimes we're all in a little bubble at times thinking everything, and it's not great, if you know what I mean. And for all the improvements that we're making, you know, they're still not the same rate that other.
Well, this is the striking thing. You look at the rounds and you see teams that have come along over the last couple of years, and we know that if Dundalk lose, they go into a parachute. They parachute into the Europa round, and I've had some like discussions. People saying, "Ah, well, it's not looking so bad in there because it's the champions of say Luxembourg, Macedonia, and stuff." You're like, you're sort of forgetting how somebody's
absolutely.
You're looking at the name rather than the
The country where they're from. Yeah, and that, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do think the positive on that, sorry, Shane, is that people realise that things aren't great and that there's a massive need for improvement. So that's where I think the positive aspect of it lies, if you like. You know,
it's like what John said earlier about coaching. I think it's the same that after every year of European results, there needs to be a discussion and a review, regardless of how well it went.
Absolutely.
There still needs to be a review anyway to go, well, what did we learn from this year? What are other countries doing or whatever it might be, you know? Shane, finally, I feel like you've got one last point to come
in. Well, just looking at the fixtures again, not to allow European football to hijack everything. I mean, I'll go for the. I can't sit here in a Johnny Ward chair and not make the outlandish statements, but I mean, how much trouble are Waterford in if UCD beat them on Friday night?
Johnny did say this a while back, and I sort of dismissed the idea that it could be plausible.
Well, you're looking at a scenario.
7 points.
If Harps managed to pull it off against Derry as well, like, you could end up on Saturday morning where there's two teams 4 points behind Waterford. So it's a huge, huge, huge game for them. It really is.
They have a lot of games in hand. I mean, obviously, their squad's been depleted. They've lost Bastian. Albazetti's been injured, which is massive.
Saw somebody tweeting there recently. I think they put up their team from 12 months ago and their team from now.
There's only one
survivor. Was that it?
Dino Halloran.
Dino Halloran, I think.
Yeah, no, the turnover's been and like sometimes momentum can suck you both ways, you know. I don't know. I think like the Waterford story has been a good one. That I'm not sure if I really want them to get into that situation at all. But obviously it looked pretty bleak there at the weekend. But we shall see. Listen, we are going to wrap things up. We're not sure where the show is going to be presented from next week. It might sort of depend on Dundalk's situation and whether me and Johnny are away or not. But John, great to have you in. Hopefully,
thank you.
Hopefully have you back in the league soon asking some questions.
Or not.
John Sullivan in a couple of weeks' time signing for a club and saying this interviews about what a wonderful manager this is. Deep down he's actually hating it. But like, you know. Will, good to have you in. We'll have you back
again. Yeah,
definitely a lot to discuss. And Shane, we'll have you back again soon.
No problem.
Johnny will be on holiday within 3 to 4 weeks.
Sure.
So I'll be
I'm
fine.
Sure he will.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you.
But there are limits to your life.